You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Hey, if we sound a little different, we're on the portable studio because we're off to Beaver Creek Precious Metals Summit, but we always make time to sit down and talk to John Rubino every other Monday. And John, well, it looks like Europe is falling into an inflationary depression.
Gary, hey, yeah. Good timing, by the way, to be at a precious metals conference. It's a good day for gold, which we'll get to. But yeah, Europe. Yes. Here's the situation in Europe. They're having massive energy shortages right now, which is pushing up the cost of living for everybody. So that's slowing down the economy, but via inflation. Meanwhile, all the companies that require a lot of electricity in order to operate are either closing down or just flat out failing. You know, so you got deindustrialization amid rising inflation and no real solution for it for them. You know, they basically just screwed up their energy systems on so many different levels that it's going to take them years, regardless of whatever happens in the world and what policies they put into place. It'll be years before Europe gets back to a point where energy is cheap and plentiful for them. So this is a very big deal. You know, that's the biggest economic entity in the world, the European Union. And it really does. I mean, it's not an exaggeration to call what they're in right now an inflationary depression. So we'll see how it affects the rest of the world. But Europe has a huge mess on its hands. And this winter is just going to be shocking. You know, just to take one example. I think it's Switzerland now is levying 3,000 euro fines on people who heat their houses above 68 degrees this coming winter. And there are other related laws and related penalties and everything. But this is, it's almost like an excuse to impose martial law right now. You know, I'd want to say that this is a planned demolition of the European economy, but if one were to happen, it would kind of look like this, probably.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. You know, I was reading that a megawatt of electricity in Germany and throughout much of Europe, Western Europe, is over $1,000 per megawatt. By comparison, in the U.S., where energy prices have gone up 20% in the past 18 months or so, it's $154 a megawatt. You're looking at almost a sevenfold difference. And you saw the pictures of people in the papers holding up their new electric bills. They've gone up five and tenfold. They're talking like British pubs are going to go out of business because they can't charge enough for the ale to pay the electric bill. So what we're seeing is, obviously, these countries are going to start mass subsidies. You know, they have no other choice and price controls. And that's going to lead to a whole nother set of problems, but they don't really have any choice. And I mean, that energy situation is really bad in the U.S. as a result of exports of LNG to Europe. Our prices went, they're already heading up because of inflation from around $4.50 per MCF to they were as high as almost 10. Now they pulled back a little bit. Once this terminal that was down, an LNG terminal, is back up, they'll be shipping even more and prices will head higher. And they're even storing LNG in ships in the Atlantic and on their way to Europe because they're probably going to run out of natural gas storage there. And it's an arbitrage. They're just waiting for the prices to go higher.
This is a huge mess. And you mentioned something that's a really important part of the story, which is the bailouts that are going to have to happen in Europe, because they can't let one third of their industrial base cease to exist. And they can't let people freeze to death in their apartments because they can't pay to keep the temperature above 30 degrees this winter. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to create a lot of new euros and just dump them out into the financial system. So what does that do for the value of the euro? You know, it can't be good. And the euro is already at parity with the dollar, which is down maybe 30% from where it was 2 years ago. So it's a huge mess. Now, you know, like you said, we have our energy issues in the U.S. too, but they're more of an annoyance than an existential threat. But they still are an annoyance. And you know, one of the reasons gas prices are not a lot higher in the U.S. is that the Biden administration has been draining the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is for major emergencies and wartime and natural disasters. You know, it's for really serious situations, not gold or gas going up from $3 to $5 or whatever. But with an election coming up,
that's the emergency.
Yeah,
that's the election's the real emergency.
Well, you know, because it would be very hard for the party in power to stay in power if gas is $6 a gallon. You know, that would be a deal breaker, I would think, for a lot of people. So they're trying to keep it at $4, give or take, in a lot of places.
And that's not so great either.
Well, that's bad, but it might not be like revolutionary from an electoral standpoint. But the problem with that is that the strategic petroleum reserve is a finite thing. You know, you can run it down to a certain point and then it's empty and that's all there is to it. Then you don't have the flexibility to use that in a real emergency. And that's the chance they're taking now. They're being very frivolous. In other words, they're trying to score political points while putting us at fairly extreme risk from an energy shortage standpoint if something serious happens before
the new
global reserve. Yeah.
And at the same time, as they're saying, go green, they're yelling it and threatening the oil companies. We need more oil. And just 6 months ago, they were trying to put them out of business and the pipelines shutdowns. It's a very schizophrenic policy. It's a badly thought out policy, a policy that has to fail because you cannot front run the market. When it comes to energy transition, that has to happen at its own rate. You can't force it. And hey, we even see nuclear power plants, new ones coming online. We're seeing Germany and France saying we're going to keep our older ones going. You know, we might see such a thing happening in the U.S. as well.
Well, yeah. A lot of countries either closed their existing nuclear plants or curtailed their plans to build new nuclear plants in the last decade as part of the transition to clean energy. And now that has just flipped on a dime. You know, it's now everybody's opening up their mothballed nuke plants and unveiling plans to build new ones, which kind of leads to what might be the most interesting investment story of the coming decade, which is uranium. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we barely have enough uranium available right now to run today's nuclear plants. So if we double the number of nuclear plants out there, which, you know, based on current plans, we're kind of heading in that direction. Where do we get the uranium? Well, we got to get it same place we got the old uranium, which is to dig it out of the ground. And the difference being that we've, as with most other industrial commodities, we found the easy deposits. And now we're left with the harder to get to, more expensive deposits, which means the price of uranium has to go up. So uranium miners looking very interesting right now. And the and Sprott has a uranium
ETF right.
Where they just buy and stockpile uranium. So they're playing a price increase there. So there are lots of easy ways to play this. There are maybe 20 viable uranium miners out there whose stock you can buy. And then there's some ETFs that are related to the industry. And all of them are up, but they're not up anything like they will be up if it plays out the way it looks like it's going to. You know,
it has to.
Let's avoid a nuclear war. Let's avoid a global depression that just destroys demand for everything. We avoid those two things. We're going to need a lot more uranium, and the price is going to have to go up dramatically. So yeah, this is a chance to get in, you know, on the third floor of a much bigger building. You know, it's not ground floor anymore, but it's still potentially a five bagger, let's say, on average with a lot of these companies. So you can make a lot of money if it plays out this way.
Yeah, well, uranium prices are still depressed between where they need to be and where they are now. Because if the uranium producers can't make a profit, and a lot of it's coming from Kazakhstan, that's the low-cost producer, and Canada, they can't turn a profit on it, then supply goes down. Then demand is going to stay the same or go up, probably go up, and then you're going to have a supply crunch, and then the prices are going to skyrocket. And there's so few pure uranium plays around in the market now, whereas last time it went crazy in 11, there were like 10 times more. Now that number has shrunk. So it's a lot easier to play this game than it was in the past. So hey, one thing we should definitely mention, well, first we'll talk about silver, what's happening there, and gold. Silver up nearly a dollar today. I should mention it's September 12th, day after 9/11, and silver is up, gold is up, although they faded a bit from their highs during the day, but silver is up still nearly a dollar.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, well, we're heading back into the favorable seasonal part of the cycle for gold and silver. You know, you normally expect in September for the precious metals markets to kind of bottom and start to come back because of Asian demand. And, you know, we're seeing that, and it's to be expected. And at the same time, we've got all those big subsidies and bailouts that we were talking about in Europe, which is a very inflationary thing going on in the world. And as far as silver goes, a lot of physical silver has been drained from the exchanges in the last few months. You see a lot of charts on YouTube and articles about this to the point where there wouldn't be enough silver if demand for physical silver increases from here, and you would either have a default on some exchange or you'd have a huge price increase where the real price, in other words, the what you actually have to pay to get physical silver, would go through the roof. You know, so we're flirting with that kind of a situation as we head into the good seasonal time for gold and silver. So you know, this is potentially a good stretch and also potentially a great stretch for gold and silver. We'll see. But I think with a lot of the mining stocks just being so beaten down right now, that there's some low risk potential winners in that space too. You know, the royalty companies,
yes,
in both gold and silver are looking really tasty right here. And a lot of the big solid miners that, are clearly going to be able to continue to produce at fairly low cost going forward. They look good. And then the little guys that the big guys have to buy out are speculative mm-hmm. plays right now, but high probability speculative plays. Yeah, you know, somebody like Agnico Eagle,
yeah.
they got to raise their reserves to replace what they're digging out of the ground and selling right now. And they're not doing it via their own exploration programs. So they've got to buy some smaller, high-quality miners in order to not just evaporate. You know, a big miner can keep producing and have lower reserves every year and just zero itself out, but it doesn't want to do that. You know, it wants to continue to produce and continue to grow. And to do that, they're going to have to buy out a lot of these little miners. So from where they are right now, which is extremely low, there are, five and 10 bagger potential in that space, really all over.
All over. And interesting thing happened, getting in a little inside baseball. Barrick sold a royalty to a gold royalty company for like 60, 65 million, biggest gold producer in the world. What's up with that? And then at the same time, which got less play, people don't always follow it, but Nevada Gold, which is a joint venture between Newmont and Barrick also sold like a $25 million royalty. So, you know, I don't know what was going through their heads, why they needed that relatively puny amount of money, but it certainly is interesting to watch. Hey, finally, one thing we got to address, the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It appears that there is a Russian retreat underway in Ukraine. It doesn't look like a particularly organized retreat. And supposedly, as of yesterday, Ukraine had captured a number of strategic cities and recaptured 3,000 miles of territory that Russia had gotten. Now, if Russia loses this war, or basically kind of goes back to status quo ante bellum, means we go back to the way things were before the war, that's going to have potentially profound implications for Putin and the Russian power structure, which apparently they're breaking with him now, and they're none too happy with the way things are going.
Yeah, losing a war is bad news for a government, especially if it's a dictatorship. And so we'll see, obviously, how this goes. There's a lot of risks and potential rewards in what's happening right now. And the big risk is that Russia escalates, you know, that they just conclude that they cannot lose under any circumstances, and they go to the next level of weaponry. And that would be terrible. Mm-hmm. And then a loss for Russia that leads to regime change is incredibly uncertain, you know, because we don't have the slightest idea who would take over if Putin leaves. And the way the world has worked is that, the relief that we feel when one dictator falls is replaced by dread as somebody even worse comes in. And, that could happen too. We're in no way out of the woods because Russia is retreating. You know, there's still a lot of chaos out there, but maybe it leads to some kind of a negotiated settlement. That's the upside possibility here. And then energy starts flowing out of Russia and Ukraine again, and that eases the agricultural bottlenecks around the world. And so maybe we're not in, the existentially horrible place where we are with a lot of global supply chains, and maybe they get back to a semblance of normal. You know, it's going to take a long time, no matter what, to get back to normal, especially because we're transitioning back to what they call onshoring, where a lot of countries are bringing factories and production capacity in general back home, and that's really expensive. But it would help. It would make this winter less deadly for a lot of people. So we can hope like that happens.
Hey, it's a bad situation. It's an interesting case here because, like you were saying about governments, the one that you're getting is generally going to be worse than the one that you had. I mean, that doesn't matter if you're a democracy or a dictatorship or totalitarian regime. Governments never seem to get better. They only get worse. So the Russians are none too happy over this. Going to be interesting to see. In any event, hey, make sure you go over to Dollar Collapse and check out the latest stories where John recently retired from, and Financial Survival Network. Got a question for John? Shoot me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. John, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
See you, Kerry.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.